I am Chris Spangle. I am currently the host of We Are Libertarians, a podcast that you can download iTunes, wearelibertarians.com. My day job is web director for the Bob and Tom Show, so it's a weird combination. A little bit about me. I started out my professional career, well, Donato's technically, but then I moved on to work for Abdul in the morning because I listened to a lot of talk radio, where I became a diehard Republican. We all do things in college we're not proud of. Please don't judge me. I was listening to a lot of talk radio, and I have always loved radio. It's always been something that I've wanted to do professionally. And I managed to get an internship at a local news talk station, 1430 AM, now is defunct. It's a sports station because we need four sports stations in Indianapolis. And I eventually became Abdul's producer, Abdul Hakim Shabazz. You probably have seen him or heard of him, or he'll tell you about him if you ever meet him. And I spent 3 or 4 years as a reporter in town, going to a lot of different events. I started, I was president of College Republicans at IUPUI, and through the process of being a reporter and being involved in talk radio and going to events for both the Democratic and the Republican Party and government events, my faith in government eventually started to erode. So once you start to see how politics actually operates from the inside, you start to see the illusion that you see on television. One key moment for me came in the 2007 mayoral debates, the mayoral campaign where Greg Ballard beat Bart Peterson miraculously. And I was at the budget meeting where Bart Peterson in August or September was giving his budget address, and it was a very big deal. It had been a summer of strife. There had been a lot of protests that summer over property taxes. And his budget was a big deal because he was adding 35% to the income tax here in Marion County. And his justification was that I'm so bold that I'm raising taxes in the middle of a mayoral campaign because we need police that badly. Which wasn't false, and he was kind of forced to do it, but it was a big deal, this budget meeting. And Greg Ballard gave a rebuttal at the end in public comments. And it was not really noteworthy, but it was noteworthy that he was the challenger to Bart Peterson, who was the odds-on favorite. At that time, Greg Ballard really had no money in his mayoral campaign. He had no shot. Everybody expected the sitting mayor running for his third term to win in a landslide with his $2 or $3 million war chest. And his challenger, who had $50,000, $70,000 at that point, didn't really have a shot. I'm walking out of the meeting after having covered it for my radio station with a reporter from Fox 59. And I say to the young lady, even though she's probably 2 years older than me at the time, I said, "So how much of Ballard's rebuttal are you going to use?" She said, "Oh, we're not covering Greg Ballard at all." I said, "Really? He's the challenger to the mayor. Like, why wouldn't you give the opposite side?" "Well, my editors have decided that since he's not spending any money on commercials with our station, we're not going to give him free advertising." I said, "That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't seem like democracy. That doesn't seem like you're doing your job informing people." She said, "That's above my pay grade, and that's what the editors have decided, and I'm not happy about it." She was gone within 2 or 3 weeks. She had left. So as someone who took seriously the job that I had to inform the public about what was going on, because Abdul and I would have everybody on, to hear that the reporter from the Magic Box, because if you're on the Magic Box, then everybody thinks that it's very informative, is not doing their job to inform the public, then we're in real trouble. So you can't... I've seen how politics works in the Republican Party. Working for Andy Horning in 2004, when he ran for the Republican Party, the Mitch Daniels campaign was stealing our yard signs. the Mitch Daniels Republican gubernatorial campaign was stealing Andy Horning's Republican congressional signs for political reasons, and it's no better in the Democratic Party. So I just became very disillusioned, and I worked with Abdul, who's very combative, who tested my beliefs by asking me questions and saying, "You really think that's true?" And a lot of what I thought by listening to Rush Limbaugh was not true. So I became politically homeless. I became politically disillusioned. And I discovered what a lot of Americans inherently feel, is that our politics today has become completely disconnected from reality. It is inauthentic. Politicians do things that if you and I did them in our daily public lives, we'd go to jail, we'd be divorced, we would be societal outcasts. And yet somehow because they have political power, we forgive a lot. And we defend the people on our team that make those mistakes. Well, I know he's a Democrat, but I'm a Democrat. I know she's a Republican, but I'm a Republican. And the other side is attacking, and we need to circle our wagons to protect this person. Instead of doing the right thing, which is saying, here is what it means to be a good, authentic individual that has everyone's best interest at heart. So we build up resentment and bitterness towards the people who have control over our lives because they're mismanaging it. They're inauthentic. We feel they lie to us. And we feel powerless because we've given over our control as individuals to these politicians who don't represent who we truly are inside anymore. I then went on to work for the Libertarian Party of Indiana. I was making very little money working in radio. And I saw Ron Paul in 2008 and became infatuated with this cranky little old man from Texas. And I saw authenticity in his message. And I think a lot of people are seeing that in Bernie Sanders as well. That's why his message is catching on. And Donald Trump. Now, as far as Sanders and Trump go, I don't think they're very authentic. I think they're very good at playing authentic, but that's my personal opinion. But I think that's why they're catching on, is they represent authenticity, that anger that we have towards the people who are controlling our lives. So I left to work for the Libertarian Party of Indiana as the executive director and ran the state political party for the next 4 years. So I went from behind the scenes of the other two parties, a reporter, the journalistic side, to now grassroots organizing. Going to meetings like this, talking to people, dozens of people at a time, and training them how to run for office, training them how to give out a message. Time and time again, I found that people felt two things kept them from getting involved in the political process. Number one, they didn't know enough. The libertarian philosophy was too big. The Leviathan that is our government is too big. There's too many policy points, and I'll never know enough. I think we feel that in our daily lives, too. There's just too many problems. There's too many challenges. How do I solve all of it? And I would say to them, bit by bit, step by step, every single day, you take one little thing in your campaign or your life, and you move forward on that one thing. The second was that it was just too difficult. They didn't know enough about the philosophy, the issues. They didn't know enough about the political activity, which is very true because it seems like it's very complex. Because you watch West Wing and you see these big organizations and you see the presidential campaigns, which is all the news that we get about politics these days, is presidential campaigns. But what you have to realize is that your local government is made up of people like you and I who find five other friends and then run a campaign and get elected, or pass ballot initiatives, or strike down ballot initiatives. We have, because the media has presented this grand scale of politics, in reality, this is pretty well attended for any political meeting in the Republican, Democratic, Libertarian Party, honestly. And if you were to ever show up to your city council meeting, you would be, you'd scare the crap out of them. Four people in Rush County would show up to every county councilor meeting, every county commissioner meeting, and videotape them. And they blocked so many big spending projects that were going to be albatrosses around the taxpayer's neck. The power of the video camera stopped these things. And so we've become disconnected from politics because of false beliefs, because of thinking things that are not true. We so often in life have these patterns or these scripts that are programmed into us. And I would think as an organization of atheists, you all are recognized this. This dogma that exists, and we have to smash through it. And one of those dogmas is that it's a binary of binary choice, that it's Republicans or Democrats, that it's, you know, good and evil, it's atheist or Christian, or you know, John Wayne versus the Indians. It's been programmed into our society. And I have found that to be well ingrained in our society, but not terminal. If enough people stand up and say, I'm going to stand up for what's right, I'm going to have courage to speak my beliefs, I'm going to go person to person. Harvey Milk, if you've ever seen the movie Milk, it was one of the best scenes, and this applies to anything, but especially politics as a libertarian. He would say, just say you're gay. Call your family members. Because then you won't be, then gay won't be this weird, silly thing, this thing that is part of the script that society has programmed. Gay will now mean your son or your daughter. Libertarian, atheist, any kind of these big beliefs, you have to speak with courage, which means speaking truth from your heart, and you become that person. Not going well so far in your case, but you just keep chipping away at it. And so much of what I've learned about libertarianism and success in politics and in so many other things is that it's all about the individual. Libertarians, to give you a very simplistic definition, were socially liberal and economically conservative. We would like to do what Republicans say they would like to do, but not necessarily what they do. And we'd like to do what Democrats say they would like to do in militaristic and personal freedoms, but not exactly what they do, because really they all just do the same thing and then they pretend to fight about it. But what it really means to be a libertarian is discovering who you are as an individual and not letting the consensus rule your belief system. So for instance, if I broke into your house and I stole your things, I would be a criminal. Okay? If all of us decided that we will break into your house and steal your things, it doesn't become more okay, it doesn't become morally right, because the group decided that your stuff belongs to us now. It becomes force. And that is what the government does. The government says that a politician's preference becomes force because they vote on it. The majority decides that someone else's property becomes the property of the public sphere. It's coercion. So everything the government does is taken from someone else. So I personally don't believe that it is right that I come into her house and steal her things. It doesn't become morally permissible for me to show up and steal her car and give her a bicycle. You still have transportation. And in fact, it'll benefit you because there'll be more exercise because you won't have a car, you'll be riding your bike. Still morally wrong for me to take your property. It doesn't become right for the group to decide that her property is now ours, even though it benefits the group to take her property, sell, and pass around amongst us. So the foundation of libertarianism is that you extend your moral philosophy of don't take other people's stuff and don't hit your sister. and extend that to your politics. That's the foundation of it. That individuals know how to run their life better than the group. 535 people in Washington, D.C. don't know how to educate your children better than you do. And when we give up our power and give up control to people in Washington, D.C. or the State House, we start to care less. You start to care less about where your money goes. You start to care less about who is helped. Libertarians and people that want no government, or Republicans who say they want limited government, or Democrats who say the government does well for people, so it does good for people, so we need to empower the government. We all want the same result. Fundamentally, we're social animals. We're social creatures. We all want to live better, help often, and wonder more. That's why we build communities. It's the fundamental premise of religion. It's the premise of this group. Build a community. Help each other to live a better life. Help each other in times of struggle. And your ideas may inspire me, and so I'm able to wonder more. You have to have freedom to do that. You have to have choice to do that. You have to want to be here. But if I show up to Tom's house and I say, guess what? Every Sunday, you will be here. Otherwise, I'm going to bankrupt you and your family, or I'm going to show up at your house with a gun and force you to be here. Your attitude immediately becomes, I don't want to go. Leave me alone. And that is the fundamental flaw in empowering the government and giving our control to government entities and bureaucracy. We as individuals start to resent the people that have control of our lives because eventually it gets to a point where it's inauthentic. We don't connect with them. So, how do you fix it? First, you have to care. You have to pay attention to what's going on. You have to understand who you are and what you believe, first and foremost, because politics is an expression of personal belief. Most of the people that I have worked with in politics and media, their personal belief is that I should be in charge. It doesn't matter what political party. Even in the Libertarian Party, there are those people. I am the smartest person. I should be in charge. And so much of it is insecurity. Can't tell you, like, I call politics the revenge of the kid that didn't get picked for the soccer team at third grade. They've found a way to make themselves popular in a group of people and give themselves power, and now they're going to make the kid who ran the soccer team pay, literally. So, authenticity and truth always beats out inauthenticity, lies, because it crumbles in the face of it. Authenticity like Ron Paul, or authenticity like Bernie Sanders, I'll say it if you're a Bernie Sanders fan, that, or even Donald Trump, will always outshine somebody like Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush is a guy who says, my ideas are good, I'm the most capable person, I should have power. So does Donald Trump, so do all politicians. But there's just something that feels inauthentic about Jeb Bush. It's a game to Jeb Bush. It's why Rand Paul is not as popular as Ron Paul. Rand Paul's playing a game to try and get power. Ron Paul says, I don't care about the game, I don't care about the power, here's what I believe, and here's what's right. So to fix it, we have to know what we believe, know who we are as human beings, and start building a community around ourselves of like-minded individuals, of people that believe what we believe, and then find ways to enact change at a very small local level. Because if you start at the township board and work your way up to the county commissioner, then you can get to Congress and then you can get to president. It doesn't start with president and then work your way down to township board. That's not how politics works. That's not how any group works. Again, we're social animals. You come in and you can't walk in and say, I'm the alpha. You have to walk into a room and kind of feel the room out. And that's how politics works. You have to walk in, feel out how things work, and then start fitting in where your strengths lie. So it's not hopeless, because there are way more of us than there are of them. We just have to start giving a shit. That is my time. If you have any questions, I know we didn't talk about issues, and that's on purpose, because you can get a lot of discussions about issues. If you want the libertarian perspective on issues, wearelibertarians.com. Check out our podcast. We do it every week, and we talk about a lot of issues, a lot of these similar things. I just have found that when you start with issues, you start dividing people. And if I were to walk in here and give my personal beliefs on abortion, war, gay marriage, we become disconnected. That's not the point of this group or any group of human beings. It's connection that we need. And I think we can all fundamentally connect on don't hit your sister, don't take my stuff, and treat each other with love and respect. And that is the fundamental foundation of the libertarian philosophy. But I will be happy. I know that a lot of times a libertarian is the weird animal in the room, and they don't quite understand it, so everybody wants to go and poke it with a stick and ask what they think about things like RFRA. So if you have questions, I'm happy to entertain those now.
And believe it or not, mental protocols like Democrats say the same things. But I thought if you can, when they get into office, that's not the way politics is
played. Right.
It's I see stretch, my back, I stretch. And I've seen good people, now it's all about power. So as a libertarian, how do you propose to stop the tendency of human nature to accumulate wealth and power once you get it?
Nothing. I am not going to sit here and tell you that if 100 libertarians got elected to the General Assembly today, that dynamic would not eventually develop. But I can say with certainty right now that if you were to elect one libertarian to the General Assembly, they will not caucus with the Republicans or the Democrats. They will be a caucus unto themselves. You elect two or three, you then have shifted power from a split house in the General Assembly. Often it's 51-48, 50, or 51-49. Then it becomes 50-49-1. And the one becomes the most powerful person in the chamber. Because our beliefs are so different, because we're skewing ourselves from power and towards individuals. It's this radical notion that we're going to take power back and give it away, you know, where most Republicans, it's about collecting power. Most Democrats, it's about collecting power, maintaining it, and rigging the system to keep others out. I mean,
I've seen it.
I've been around for 10 years. I've seen it too.
And all of a sudden,
yeah.
And so I'm just saying, we're a small group now, but you get power.
Of course.
So
that's why
I don't see. I hate to say it, I don't, because I'm turned off on politics, because what I've seen also in this state. And I vote because I have to. I'm gay, there are people in the state. I shouldn't have to say this, but I have. So that's why I was on a vote. But I don't see. It must be a flaw in human nature. And if you became the dominant part of this,
the other part of it, of course, one of the key pieces is our ballot access laws, and that's what is not I have not mentioned, and that's a key part of what you're saying. If you were running for office in the General Assembly, I think it was 60 or 70% of the House and Senate races are completely unopposed. So, what happens every 10 years during redistricting? And it's why Todd Rokita is a congressman and not senator, is because Todd Rokita proposed this wild notion in rethinking redistricting. We should draw boundaries based on population, and that's it. Not population plus how do people vote in primaries. So there are whole streets. Like, you can look around the state and all around the nation. There are communities, towns, divided in half because this side's the Republican side and this side's the Democrat side. And then they draw these little crazy maps and they agree, okay, for the next 10 years, we're going to fight over these four seats. It's a way for them to reserve resources. It's a way for them to only put money into four races instead of 150. So, and the Libertarians have to win 2% every 4 years in the Secretary of State's office to become a political party, 10% to get major party status, which is incredibly difficult. And all across the nation, we have allowed Republicans and Democrats to write our ballot access laws. And it's the same as saying, you know, Chevy and Ford get to write all the laws regarding automobiles. And lo and behold, we only have Fords and Chevys to buy. We don't have Toyotas, we don't have Hondas, we don't have Fiats. You know, we don't allow foreign cars like BMWs in because we have let them write the legislation. So one of the fundamental principles of libertarianism is rolling those back and making it as easy as possible. One of the key planks for libertarians in Indiana is to make ballot access 0.5% for a party. So that's what it was. Until a libertarian cost a Republican a race in a sheriff's race, and the Democrat beat out the Republican, and so in a northern county, like 25 years ago, and the Republicans in that area got really ticked off about it, scared all the other Republicans, and they rewrote it to make it 2%. So libertarians lost ballot access for many years, and then we regained it. I would like to see it back to 0.5%. That's a group of 10,000 people saying we're a real political party instead of a group of 30,000 people. And then major party status is probably somewhere around 150,000, 200,000 people, which is really, really tough. Because it just, you know. Right. Yeah. It's Republicans without morals is what, that's what people think libertarians are. And that's not the case at all. I personally want as little government as I can possibly stand, down to probably only courts and probably police. And I know that sounds completely radical, but I believe that human beings are empathetic and that we see, when we see needs, we fill it. Yes?
I covered small town government and I have three questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
First is, and this pertains to libertarianism, is it total, we don't want, because on a small scale, I saw, we're going to privatize the bus system for this certain school district.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. The kids started getting left on the bus because these people didn't care. They got left on the bus, dropped off at the wrong stop. It was a total disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess are you telling me you're in favor of let's privatize the whole damn world? Because I cannot get behind that after seeing it in action.
Yeah, no. The way that we privatize now is complete bullcrap. If you go and listen to episode 91 of our podcast, it's my friend Woody talking about his daughter basically being murdered by the private medical system in our prisons here in Indiana. When we privatize in our current form in government, we are basically saying it is okay for there to be a monopoly. Libertarians don't believe in monopolies. So in that case with the bus system, what happens is the government says, you have this contract for the next 5 years, or in the case of our parking meters, the next 50 years. You have a contract guaranteed to run our bus system for 5 years. And it's darn near impossible for you to lose that contract because the government is not going to have the extra money to buy you out of that contract. So the incentive is gone for that company to then innovate, to improve their service, to invest, and often to get the bid, a bus company or a parking meter company or whatever, they will undercut their bid so they don't have enough capital to run it effectively. And so who suffers? It's us. It's the kids. In the case of Rachel, we have hired a company called Horizon to run medical care in our prisons. And when you have a monopoly like that, what happens is you have to have a certain level of doctors because you have to have a certain level of care, but you your costs go up because medical increases have gone up significantly. I know I just took a 7% pay decrease because of the cost of medical care, and that happens every year. Obamacare didn't work. I'm sorry, that was a cheap shot. I apologize. To a degree. Insert. Yeah, that's one of the good parts. But what happens is medical care increases. When they sign these three-year contracts with Corizon, every year it goes up another 10%. But capital stays the same because they can't charge the state. So what do? They start cutting costs for the people who matter the least to a private company like Corizon, the inmates. And so now we have people who are left in prisons, like Rachel, for 3 months, visibly dying, not being cared for because they just don't care. And there are 100 people. I mean, so the problem with privatization and the way that we do it now is that there is no competition. So it is not fair to say that in a libertarian world where everything is privatized, you're going to get that same service, because that's just not how it would work. You would easily be able to, as a community, fire the company that is not taking care of the kids on the bus and hire a different company, and there will be multiple companies, multiple options.
I just can't place my faith in company. I can't do it. I mean, they have a minimum wage. Is how much I can pay you without it being criminal. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's disgusting.
Right.
So I just.
But where does the minimum wage come from?
Government right now, and it's nothing that anybody can live on. And these companies, instead of, you know, taking a moral high ground, they're like, that's fine, I'm going to pay you so I don't get legal action against me.
Right.
Like, I'm going to pay you the bare minimum. It's, I just can't sit there and say, okay, if we foster all this competition, it'll just turn out fine because people are going to be morally good. Mm-hmm. They're not, especially when you have shareholders that come into play. There's got to be a way to get the shareholders out of the whole thing so they're not just catering to them and, you know,
right,
the CEOs and the hierarchy.
Corporations are government entities. The minimum wage is a government entity. The contract being negotiated with the busing company is by a government entity. Government is all throughout it, and it's not working. So why would we pin that on the free market, on competition, on a libertarian ideal, when there's four clear examples of government interference there? Government is not perfect, but we expect it to be perfect. But it can never be perfect because it's made up of individuals, which are all imperfect beings. What we do when we entrust the government with situations like that is we say, well...
Are we entrusting the government because the lobbyists have so much sway that is it chicken or egg? Is it companies,
right,
or is it government? That's what I can't tell.
Yeah.
So I don't think the companies are working, the government's not.
I'm
working.
Not saying in my world that corporations rule anything, because corporations are a government-created entity.
So you're saying they are the government.
They are the government. Corporations and government, it's not be a Republican because you love corporations and be a Democrat because you love government. It's the same thing. It's a false binary choice. That you, if you choose to vote libertarian, corporations are going to run your life. That's not how it's going to work, because corporations will fold all the time. We are a highly adaptable species. When we have problems, we figure out problems pretty quickly. And that is putting our human nature into work in a libertarian society with spontaneous order, where we're going to highly adapt. There will be failures. There will be... But so much of what we do is we say, well, we can't do this because of the privatization example. But you have to think how all these levels of government, it's all monopoly. There's no real, we don't have a free market. I don't care what Jeb Bush or any of these losers tell you. We don't have a free market, and we it's never really, if a government exists, there is no free market. It's a falsehood.
So you're in favor of totally free market, everybody laissez-faire up to themselves, they do what's best.
Absolutely.
Oh, I don't agree with
that.
Yeah. I don't think people...
So what would you say about the
That was not a free market either, because if you... There's a great documentary. It's not a documentary necessarily. It's a History Channel show about the men who built America. Those guys just bought and paid for politicians. It's just exactly what we have now.
So that's what I advocate for, public finance and public campaigns to get away from the party. Yeah. And of course, it would hurt her party because the only one that's going to take a minimum amount.
Sure.
You know, that part.
So you're advocating for the limiting of free speech?
Well, I would say in situations, yes. You don't have an absolute freedom. And because I've seen it.
Are there examples of a true free market? I mean, is this? This is completely theoretical at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's let's see what would happen.
I think the parliamentary system is better than one.
Absolutely, I am giving you a destination. Okay, I'm not giving you a lot of direction. I'm looking at how our politics and how our world exists today and saying, I'm unhappy with it. And here is my proposed way to do better. And giving you things to think about. With Citizens United, this is one of the places that I agree and I disagree and I can't reconcile it because this is one of those destination directional things. I'm totally against the buying and selling of politicians through Citizens United. But I'm also not for limiting free speech and basically instituting public financing, which rules out the power of small groups to then have their voice heard in our politics. I don't think that public financing will bring about parliamentary procedure. I think the way to get money out of politics is to start changing how elections are run, by rethinking how we do redistricting, ending gerrymandering, and that's the first place to start. We have to make our elections fair and competitive. And, you know, I don't think you have to come to my destination of no government exists, all free markets. But what I want to impress upon you is the idea that competition is good because that competing for the bid to get a monopolized contract is not competition. Republicans are lying to you when they say that. They're full of crap. Imagine that. But I think the way that we make things competitive is by exhausting their resources and empowering ours, which is making every single election race competitive.
So we will finish.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you the way to get the contracts with that.
Mm-hmm.
They only need computer systems, so they put a contract in force for everyone's rights. They built this computer system. People have best become dependent on that computer system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So contract comes out. Right? Who's going to get the contract? Or will they depend on everything that they've designed?
Right.
So again, it's not only the money situation, it's also sometimes they build these systems that only they know because know the IT people, it's hard to come in and assume an IT structure that some of us.
And then the cost of training people, yeah.
And then they skyrocket the contract the next 5 years because they're going to be.
You know who the CEO of WellPoint, or the CEO of Corizon is, the company that I talked about that killed my friend's daughter? It's Woody Myers. Woody Myers is the former CEO of WellPoint. He's a medical doctor. Very nice man, very smart guy. He's run for Congress. He's run for mayor. He's very well connected in the local community. He personally donates to people like Andre Carson and other Democratic politicians. And he's the CEO of a company that depends on government contracts. And so when Corizon says we need a new CEO, they don't go and look for... I mean, they found a qualified guy to run a medical institution, but they also found a guy who was politically connected that would ensure that there's food on their table. Their interest is, as a public company, is profit. But the profit comes at the expense of human life. And there's no way I'm ever going to support that kind of privatization. You know, I care less about privatizing parking meters because if the parking meter service sucks... Oh well, nobody's gonna die. But
they're not building a system. I mean, they have a system, but any hospital probably could take a system.
Yeah.
But again, in the government, especially in the military, they build these systems. It's very hard to account.
Can I ask what department you work
in? Defense Finance Academy.
Oh, okay. All right.
So we see it. So a lot of times it's not only the counter, it's just the, what IT comes in. I know one situation where we ever put out a bid and no one applied because they didn't want to sue the system because they didn't mean they would have to hire people.
Right.
Which would cause their end to go up and they have software. So a lot of times it's not only about the monopoly because the payment is also, I want to say, not just kind of that's happening.
Sure.
It's also, especially if they build a system, like the state and the human contract, and build this computer system for jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's very difficult for another IT firm to come in. And plus, that IT firm, even if they're writing a contract, you have to write SOPs, you have to make sure there's thorough knowledge. It's still a challenge for the user that's coming to come in.
Right.
There wasn't a base of assuming responsibility for that.
Right.
Just,
yeah, so.
I just want to keep
no. We did not contract you to do that. Any other questions?
I have a really general, basic question.
Okay.
Why do people need so much money for campaigns? What does it go to? And why is it, okay, I'm going to run for office. I need several million dollars to run a campaign. Why mm-hmm. is it so expensive?
Partly because we don't care as a society, and you have to do everything you can to reach out to people. And so when 20% of your population votes and does it reluctantly, he's not excited to go vote. He's going because they're spending his money and he wants, you know, it's going to exist. Right, exactly. And we have let government get to the point where it's a threat to our life. It's gotten so big. The reason it's so expensive is what you do when you start a campaign is you have to hire staff because you have to manage all the aspects of a campaign. Got to hire a fundraiser to raise more money to keep the organization going. You've got to hire somebody to keep scheduling and making sure that there are events and people to talk to. You've got to have grassroots materials like all those awful mail pieces that you get that you don't read, all those commercials that you fast forward on your TiVo. All the ways, anytime you ignore a politician, that costs you money, costs them money. But with public financing, it costs us money. So it just takes a lot of capital, both human and monetary, to run a campaign, to reach a lot of people. Scott Walker ran out of money because he had 100 people in his campaign.
So it's all just payroll.
It's a lot of it's payroll and materials. There's the financing rules are very limited as to what you can spend it on. You know, you spend it. It's like building a little business. And I always a guy like Scott Walker shouldn't be president. He can't run a small organization to run for president. That's a business that he's running. It folded immediately. A guy like Mike Pence. I mean, I was on Rupert's campaign for governor. And he was the only one who had any kind of experience running a small business. John Gregg and Mike Pence were lawyers together. They went to law school together. They both were talk radio show hosts. Then they both became elected officials.
That was a business.
Their
talk show.
Right. Their talk show was a business. And let me tell you, I get paid to watch TV for a living. I probably should edit that part out of the recording. But, you know, Rupert has to go out and find ways to kill sales and find new ways to generate income to pay his employees. And it does not surprise me that somebody like Mike Pence is a terrible manager of bureaucracy. It does not surprise me that Barack Obama is a terrible manager of a bureaucracy. Whereas Bill Clinton managed bureaucracy really well because he had experience as an AG and then as a governor of Arkansas managing bureaucracy. But Mike Pence had people run his campaign, like Jeff Caldwell, who runs Caldwell Hardware, and several other businesses on the South Side. So his business, the campaign, was run effectively. So that's why it's so expensive. It's sort of, we have to raise this much money because the other guy is too. So you have to meet fire for fire.
And is anybody else feeling disillusioned? Because you see the names Clinton, Bush, even Rand Paul, like it's just become such a family thing. Mm-hmm. I just rolled my eyes this whole election. Mm-hmm. Like, that almost
It's always been.
Right.
Yeah.
The people in Congress, their generation.
And that's
the reason priests are supposed to marry and have kids is to prevent dynasties. I mean, this has been going back, it's all of human lifespan.
Power once it's accumulated, is very hard to lose. Prescott Bush set into motion a dynasty. And if you don't, it's not them that we can be mad at. It's us for building this, allowing the system to be built. And this is so much of my frustration, is that we like our ears being tickled every 4 years. We like to hear good things. We like to hear all the free stuff that we're going to get. But in reality, Bernie Sanders cannot afford Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump. Like, we can't afford the $12 trillion more of debt that they're promising. And surprisingly, as much as people want to say Uncle Bernie doesn't understand economics, Donald Trump's plan's more expensive. And he's the conservative Republican that's leading in the polls.
It just cracks me up that everybody conveniently forgot how many times Donald Trump has filed for bankruptcy.
Right.
I mean, maybe you played the system, but you
that's
still have that problem. Right.
Yeah.
And also, how many times he's used the power of government to shift people out of his way.
He not only admits it, he's proud of it. I mean, that he buys and sells politicians. You know, but again, it just speaks to, we want someone who we can identify with in politics because we're starving for authenticity. Donald Trump is a guy, I mean, one of the few books that my dad has read, he runs a successful small business where he refinishes floors, does construction cleanup. One of the few books that my dad has sat down to read was Donald Trump's books. And every small business owner who makes up 70% of the jobs in this country wants to be Donald Trump someday and thinks that they can be. And it's not that they can't, it's that they want to make sure that they can. So they're going to elect somebody who can allow the American dream to continue to exist. And Donald Trump exemplifies that because they see in someone a person that they'd like to be. I'd love to have $10 billion. I'll buy you guys a nice church.
So
what we have done is we have said to the government, make our marriage contract for us. You are the ones who write the marriage contract. So in a world where there is no government marriage, okay, because marriage is a religious institution that the government put itself in charge of 100 years ago to make sure the blacks and whites couldn't marry. Okay, it's about coercion again. It's planning a society in the way that a group of powerful people think that they ought to be in charge. I don't think the government should tell anybody who can and can't put their stuff together. But you're right. There needs to be a way to separate things when it goes bad. It's foolish for Christian conservatives, and I am a Christian. I mean, I'm the opposite of him. I went from atheist to Christian. And it's just foolish to think that everybody's going to stay together. I'm divorced. You know, I'm one of the terrible 50% of Christians that got divorced. But what I'd like to see is marriage contracts and not divorce contracts. Prenuptial agreements for every couple. So instead of divorce attorneys, there would be marriage attorneys. Because I think it's a much better plan for the next future, this is ex-Chris Spangle, for us to sit down when we're in love and happy to decide how we're going to put our things together and what's going to happen when it comes apart. There would be boilerplate legal documents that would be used, that attorneys would draw up and have. Because in the process of saying, what happens when you don't love me anymore and we have to break up, you're going to see, I mean, I saw a lot of my ex-wife after our marriage ended, and I was like, that person was in there because we were separating our things. I would have liked to have known that before we got married. So we have marriage attorneys and marriage contracts, and we discuss real issues instead of this false notion of we're in love and everything's great. Let's get, you know, it, again, it's one of those scripts that we've built that this is how marriage is going to go. But we never want to sit there. You know, we go to the counseling session with the pastor, and we sit there for three hours. And, you know, yeah, that, I've never thought about that before. But really, it's you don't listen. I mean, if you're married, you know the. I just think we'd have a much better understanding of who we're marrying and who we're putting our stuff together with, if we did it before instead of after. Again, that would all be part of that have, that process.
If like a disabled show, or then if we had friends.
You think that, but guess that still exists. See, part of the problem of understanding libertarianism is we go into the theoretical and we presume that that stuff's not happening. I mean, people are dying at the hands of government. People are going to die if there is no government. Marriage contracts will contain the same things that divorce contracts contain. Human beings are full of patterns. These patterns exist, whether there is no government entity controlling us or not. So we can plan through the government, or we can plan without the government for these eventual patterns to exist. That's what I advocate, is that this is not working for us, and that you, working for the government, know better than anybody your complete inability to make any changes in your situation at work. You are completely paralyzed, and it will take years and millions of dollars for you to change the things that you'd like to change. Wouldn't it be better if you had four or five different choices of places to go work that did the same job that you do? Child Protective Services, for instance, it's that concept would exist in a libertarian society, because there are people who have children that are monsters. I have several situations of several friends who are dealing with Child Protective Services, and the only people that are being benefited by the bureaucracy of Child Protective Services are the abusive fathers. And the one that suffers the most is the child. And my social worker friends don't want to go work at CPS because it is absolute torture. Because they sit there and they watch children suffer, and their hands are tied by the legislature. I am saying let's have five different agencies that are privatized that do what Child Protective Services, or 20 different services that do what Child Protective Services does, instead of one. This monopoly hurts children. It's not that I don't want Child Protective Services functions to exist. It's just that I look at it and say, people are being hurt. I know people will be hurt in any system, but I want less people to be hurt. It would be a nonprofit if that exists. I mean, but it's the idea of a nonprofit. Again, you all know, being a nonprofit, you have certain standards that limit you, that you have to meet, instead of just being an open group of people who have your best interest in, you know, governing bodies. There are it would be in the nonprofit model. There would be governing bodies and then outside agencies that then check what's happening inside. Nonprofits are technically supposed to have outside sources, both financial and other functions, to check on the board of the nonprofit, the functions of the nonprofit, to make sure that they're governing themselves according to their bylaws and their charter correctly. So those functions have extended out of human experience. We have those for a reason, because that's what works. So that would continue. That would still be the case. I don't think we should be terrified by the idea of profit, because profit is how people make more money. Money is an incentive for you to do your work better. There's situations that I've been in where I have I have used my creativity to try and make the company more money, and I was completely shut down. And my incentive goes away to make the company more money, to use my innovation to help the company. But there's only one of those companies. You know, I can't. When money is not inherently evil, money is just a tool. You know, everything boils down to incentives. Economics is the foundation of human movement and how we operate amongst each other. So I gave a really long-winded answer to say nonprofit. But
so you're saying let's give the people the money and not corporations?
Mm-hmm. There's always going to be people in a structure that make more than the people at the bottom, but there's more opportunity for
right,
you
not
to...
400 times, which is what we're like
sure.
right now with the CEO to worker ratio.
Everything now is perverse, okay? So, you see why I try not to start out by talking about issues, because then we get into issues and we all start picking each other apart and find ways to disconnect from each other's opinions. I saw a comedian last night, a brilliant comedian named Stuart Huff, who talked about this car goes over the edge... And they're all running to the car thinking, God, I hope he's not a Republican, because if he hates gays, I'm not saving him. I mean, it's, you know, it's...